Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, January 29th, 2021. Here are some of the headlines. Annual March for Life held in Washington, D.C., marking the anniversary of the Supreme Court decision legalizing abortion. A smaller in-person crowd due to recent security concerns and the coronavirus pandemic. So that was supplemented by a virtual rally. President Joe Biden and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen meeting at the White House, urging Congress to quickly pass the president's proposed $1.9 trillion coronavirus aid package. Yellen saying the price of doing nothing is much higher than the price of doing something and doing something big. Dr. Anthony Fauci and other White House coronavirus advisors are saying results of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine study are encouraging. But the recent discovery in South Carolina of a virus variant that originated in South Africa and Brazil is a wake-up call to the country to get serious about vaccinations and strategies like wearing masks to limit the spread. And new National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan warning of an escalating nuclear crisis with Iran. From WashingtonPost.com, as the coronavirus forced their biggest annual rallying event, the March for Life, online on Friday, abortion opponents began facing the reality of a new White House strongly in favor of abortion rights and the question of whether Donald Trump has helped or harmed their cause. The March for Life has been held each January on the National Mall since the passage of Roe v. Wade, the 1973 Supreme Court decision that guaranteed a woman's right to an abortion. Last week, organizers announced that the massive event, which usually draws tens of thousands from across the country, would not be held in person, citing concerns about security and the pandemic. That was from Washington Post. The virtual rally included a few members of Congress, including a freshman Republican.
Hi there. I'm Congresswoman Kat Kamak, proudly representing Florida's 3rd Congressional District, the Gator Nation. I'm so sorry that we aren't able to celebrate in our nation's capital today as one, but I'm proud to join you virtually as we celebrate life. As the youngest Republican woman elected in Congress, my pro-life story is a personal one that has affected my entire life and has made me who I am today. Before I was born, my mother suffered a devastating stroke just before giving birth to my sister. Doctors told her then that future pregnancies would be extremely high risk. Years later, when she was pregnant with me, against the urging of her doctors and even family, she did something incredible. She chose life. Her bravery and courage in the face of this difficult decision led to my passion for standing up for the rights of the innocent and the unborn. Life is sacred. The rights of unborn children are sacred, and this movement to support the right to life is a critical one. I vow to stand up for the millions of innocent lives across this country, and I am proud to stand beside this movement's passionate and dedicated advocates. Your integrity in choosing to stand up for this population is often unpopular with your peers, your friends, and even your neighbors sometimes, but never lose faith. Advocates like you who don't sit by when the rights of millions are infringed are critical to ensuring that we protect lives for years to come. Thank you for your passion. Thank you for your conviction to do what's right. And thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. I hope to join you next year in person in our nation's capital as we celebrate our most precious and vulnerable, and life. Thank you.
Congresswoman Kat Kamak, Republican of Florida. The theme of the March for Life this year is Together Strong, Life Unites. Most of those who took part were Republicans, but there were also a couple of Democrats, including Angie Hatton, Minority Whip in the Kentucky House of Representatives.
I believe that life begins at conception. I believe that God knew us before he formed us in the womb. These beliefs are an important part of my Christian faith, which guides my votes in the Kentucky legislature to protect unborn life. I'm proud that my state is a national leader in legislation that protects the unborn. I'm also a Democrat, and I serve in my party's leadership as House Minority Whip. I was glad to be asked to speak today because I believe in this year's theme, Together Strong, Life Unites. I believe we need a bipartisan effort to end abortion, but not just by outlawing it, but also by eliminating the reasons women seek abortions in the first place. When we make access to health care so difficult that only the wealthy get to be healthy, when we don't pay working mothers a living wage, and when we don't support families struggling with affordable child care and preschool, when we don't adequately fund foster care and adoption services and social services, we drive up the number of women who feel that they have no choice but to seek an abortion. I believe we should all be pro-life for the whole life. So in the same way that I found the political courage to speak the pro-life message as a Democrat, I'm asking pro-life Republican legislators to find the courage to support not only anti-abortion legislation, but also pro-babies and moms legislation. Nationwide, a third of Democrats are pro-life, which amounts to about 21 million of us. If you're one of those, consider joining Democrats for Life organization at democratsforlife.org. The pro-life movement has had some success in recent decades, but our work is far from over. I want a Kentucky and a country where no woman feels she has no choice but abortion, where everyone has a chance for a happy and healthy life from the moment we're conceived until the Lord calls us home. That's what pro-life means to me. I'm proud to take part in this year's March for Life rally and to continue striving to live and legislate, believing that regardless of political affiliation, together we are strong and that life unites us. Thank you.
Kentucky State Representative Angie Hatton. As mentioned, the March for Life usually is in person and attracts upwards of 100,000 protesters to fill the streets of Washington, D.C. It's been held each year since the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973. After today's online march, a much smaller group, perhaps a few hundred, did march to the Supreme Court. The actual anniversary date of the Roe v. Wade decision, January 21st, and on that day, the group NARAL Pro-Choice America put out a statement that reads in part, "The Biden-Harris administration embodies a new and welcome era of leadership, one that's committed to taking bold action to safeguard reproductive freedom and connect reproductive rights to the fight for justice and equality." Today, NARAL's Twitter account posted this video.
Look closer at who tried to overturn the presidential election, and you'll see a lot of the militants behind the riots are anti-choice extremists. Derek Evans stalked clinic workers, arrested for storming the Capitol. Taylor Hansen, clinic protester, insurrectionist. Elijah Schaefer, anti-choice activist, broke into Nancy Pelosi's office. Abby Johnson, anti-choice celebrity, promoted events tied to the failed coup. And Senators Cruz and Hawley. So when these extremists march for life, remember who they are.
A video from NARAL. You're listening to Washington Today. Pharmaceutical company Johnson & Johnson reporting that its coronavirus vaccine provides good protection against COVID-19 in a Phase 3 clinical trial. And the protection is a level above the Food and Drug Administration's minimum, but it's lower than the two vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, which have already been approved for emergency use and are being distributed. Still, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top U.S. infectious disease expert, telling reporters in a White House briefing, the Johnson & Johnson news is good.
In the study that was just reported by Janssen, Johnson & Johnson, it was a trial using their Ad26, and the overall vaccine efficacy in the study was 66%, but for the United States, it was 72%. Now, the important issue, because the first thing people do is compare a 72% efficacy with the previously reported in other trials of 94 to 95%. That is true, but when one looks at the potential impact on a very important aspect of what we look at carefully, is namely severe disease, that overall in the United States, in South Africa, and in Brazil, the overall efficacy for severe disease was 85%. And in fact, in the study, including in the South African isolate, there were essentially no hospitalizations or deaths in the vaccine group, whereas in the placebo group, there were. So this really tells us that we have now a value-added additional vaccine candidate that will, of course, as happens with every candidate, will present the details of their data to the FDA. But I want to point out that this has important potential and real implications both domestically and globally, because as many of you are aware of, this is a single-shot vaccine in which you start to see efficacy anywhere from 7 to 10 days following the first and only shot. It is very, very good with regard to cold chain requirements, namely requiring only a refrigerator. It is inexpensive, and the company is capable of making doses in the numbers of billions.
Dr. Anthony Fauci heads the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, also the chief scientific advisor to President Joe Biden. Both the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the one from Novavax announced Thursday showed lower efficacy against the coronavirus variant first discovered in South Africa and Brazil. Dr. Fauci saying this is a wake-up call to get ahead of the variants by vaccinating as many people as possible.
That antigenic variation, i.e. mutations that lead to different lineages, do have clinical consequences. Because as you can see, even though the long-range effect in the sense of severe disease is still handled reasonably well by the vaccines, this is a wake-up call to all of us that we will be dealing, as the virus uses its devices to evade pressure, particularly immunological pressure, that we will continue to see the evolution of mutants. So that means that we, as a government, the companies, all of us that are in this together, will have to be nimble to be able to just adjust readily to make versions of the vaccine that actually are specifically directed towards whatever mutation is actually prevalent at any given time. And finally, this all tells us that it is an incentive to do what we've been saying all along, to vaccinate as many people as we can, as quickly as we possibly can, because mutations occur, because the virus has a playing field, as it were, to mutate. If you stop that and stop the replication, viruses cannot mutate if they don't replicate. And that's the reason to continue to do what we're doing, namely intensify our ability and our implementation of to vaccinate as many people as possible, as quickly as possible.
Dr. Anthony Fauci in a virtual briefing hosted by the White House Coronavirus Response Team. Another member is the director of the CDC, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, and she said that surveillance of the virus variants is being increased.
We continue to remain concerned about the emergence of variants in the United States and are rapidly ramping up surveillance and sequencing activities as we work to closely monitor and identify variants as they emerge. Any information we have, we will then share with you as rapidly as possible. The B.1.1.7 variant that was first detected in the UK has now been confirmed in 379 cases in 29 states as of January 27th. Yesterday, South Carolina public health officials notified the public about the first two documented cases of the B.1.351 variant, which was officially first detected in South Africa, now in the United States. These cases were identified in different parts of the state and not believed to be epidemiologically linked. They each did not have any travel history. We are still learning more about their exposures. And earlier this week, Minnesota identified the first US case of the P1 variant. This is the variant that originally emerged in Brazil. CDC will continue communicating with international, state, and local partners to monitor the presence and impact of variants in the United States and around the world. And we are actively working with national reference laboratories, state health departments, and researchers across the country to improve our understanding of these variants and how they may impact the pandemic. We also know viruses mutate, and they tend to mutate in ways that are advantageous to the virus. We expected this, and this is why I feel compelled to underscore for you the need for each of us to remain steadfast in our commitment to taking all of the appropriate steps to protect ourselves and our communities. You're going to hear me say this a lot, so here it is. Wear a mask. Stay 6 feet apart. Avoid crowds and poorly ventilated spaces. Also, now is not the time to travel. If you choose to travel, please follow the CDC guidelines and be aware that you must wear a mask as you travel. And when it's your turn, please roll up your sleeve and get vaccinated. If we do all these things, there is less virus spreading, and the conditions can produce variants are lessened.
Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Johnson & Johnson expected to apply for emergency use authorization from the FDA for its vaccine next week, so that approval could come by March. U.S. government has an agreement to buy 100 million doses from Johnson & Johnson for $1.5 billion. NBC News 4 in New York reporting that New York may have undercounted COVID-19 deaths among nursing home residents by thousands. The state attorney general charged in a report that dealt a blow to Governor Andrew Cuomo's oft-repeated claims that his state is doing better than others in protecting its most vulnerable. The attorney general, Letitia James, says the discrepancy is primarily due to the state health department's nursing home death data, not accounting for nursing home residents who died from COVID-19 in hospitals after being transferred from their nursing homes. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo asked about this today.
Remember the context here. The report affirmed everything the commissioner said. Where this starts is, frankly, a political attack from prior federal administration, HHS, their great spokesperson, Michael Caputo, who's Roger Stone protege, who said we had more nursing home deaths in New York because of something that the state health department did. This report affirms everything the commissioner said for the past year. The State Department of Health followed federal guidance by CMS and CDC. Commissioner said no not-for-profit nursing home was forced to take anyone. Report confirms that. If they took a person who was not, who they could not care for, a COVID-positive person, they violated the law. The report says that. And the Department of Health only counted the number of deaths in hospitals and the number of deaths in nursing homes, released that number. That number stays the same. Well, how about people who were transferred from a hospital back to a nursing home? That number, the department was correlating, because you have to get that from the nursing homes. And the report also says the information from nursing homes is often incorrect. And that's the number to date, but it's an ongoing process.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo at a briefing in Albany. He referred to his commissioner, that's the state health commissioner, Dr. Howard Zucker. New York's official tally of nursing home deaths from COVID-19 is 8,711. So if there was an undercount as charged in the state attorney general's report, the true number would be more than 13,000, and that would make New York the sixth highest in the nation. Washington Today continues in a minute. And welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines. Former FBI lawyer Kevin Kleinsmith sentenced to 1 year of probation and 400 hours of community service after pleading guilty to altering an email that was used to help justify surveillance of an advisor to former President Donald Trump's 2016 campaign. So far, this is the only criminal charge brought by the special counsel John Durham's ongoing investigation of the origins of the Russia investigation. Space Force unveiling a rank structure for its officers and enlisted personnel. It mostly matches the Air Force. That goes against the will of a few people, including Congressman Dan Crenshaw and actor William Shatner, also known as Star Trek's Captain Kirk, who urged the rank structure to follow the Navy, as Star Trek and most other fictional stories set in outer space did. And President Joe Biden makes his first trip to Walter Reed National Military Medical Center outside of Washington, D.C., visiting with wounded service members. Well, before President Biden left the White House, he met in the Oval Office with Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. They talked about the state of the economy and the president's proposal for another coronavirus aid bill. The president wants $1.9 trillion.
There is an overwhelming consensus among economists, left, right, and center, that this is a unique moment in this crisis. And the cost of inaction is high, the cost of inaction, and it's growing every day. Crisis itself is accelerating. 900,000 more Americans filed unemployment for unemployment insurance, and this week alone, 30 don't have enough food to eat this week. Interest rates are historic low, and the return on investments in the economy have never been higher. And it's not just me saying this, it's a consensus among the vast majority of leading economists in the advisors to former President Trump and George Bush. And so I've been meeting all morning with other folks as well. The notion here is we have to act now. There's no time for any delay. And so we could end up with 4 million fewer jobs this year, according to Moody's, a Wall Street firm, and it could take a year longer to return to full employment if we don't act and don't act now. We could see the entire cohort of kids with a lower lifetime earnings because they're deprived of another semester of school. Millions of parents, and maybe some of you, millions of parents are, particularly moms, are forced to stay home, reducing the family wages. And if they're a single wage earner, it's really difficult. And future job prospects that they have no choice but to stay home and take care of their children. Millions of people are out of work, unemployed. Future millions are held back for no good reason other than our failure to act. So the choice couldn't be clearer. We have learned from past crises the risk is not doing too much. The risk is not doing enough. And this is the time to act now. I've asked Secretary Yellen, who's been leading this effort, to come in, and we're going to go into some detail among ourselves. But I think she has a statement to make as well.
Thank you very much, Madam Secretary. Mr. President. Well, there is a huge amount of pain in our economy right now, and it was evident in the data released yesterday. Over a million people applied for unemployment insurance last week, and that's far more than in the worst week of the Great Recession. And economists agree that if there's not more help, many more people will lose their small businesses, the roofs over their heads, and the ability to feed their families. And we need to help those people before the virus is brought under control. The President's American Rescue Plan will help millions of people make it to the other side of this pandemic. And it will also make some smart investments to get our economy back on track. I want to emphasize the president is absolutely right. The price of doing nothing is much higher than the price of doing something and doing something big. We need to act now, and the benefits of acting now and acting big will far outweigh the costs in the long run.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen in the White House Oval Office with President Joe Biden. Some Republicans have begun pushing back on the need and scope for another spending bill. Associated Press has a story that reads, a Republican Senate aide said that lawmakers' offices are not being bombarded with calls for an additional aid package, saying the constituents are mainly focused on the looming impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. The aide speaking on the condition of anonymity to discuss private conversations. On Wall Street, the Dow down 620, NASDAQ down 266, S&P down 73. Securities and Exchange Commission saying it is going to investigate why certain online trading platforms temporarily blocked users from purchasing some targeted stocks and if there was illegal market manipulation in those stocks skyrocketing prices, which has led to some heavy losses by large funds that were short selling those stocks, betting the price would drop. One of the stocks, GameStop, back trading today. It's been up 1,600% in 3 weeks. The SEC putting out a statement reading in part, extreme stock volatility has the potential to expose investors to rapid and severe losses and undermine market confidence. The White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki asked today to respond to an article that was published yesterday in Politico. The article begins, in the midst of his campaign for president, Joe Biden took his younger brother Frank aside to issue a warning. For Christ's sake, watch yourself, Biden said of his brother's potential business dealings, according to a person with knowledge of the conversation. Don't get sucked into something that would, first of all, hurt you. Politico goes on, only a week into his presidency, Biden already has had to answer for matters related to his family.
Can you confirm the Politico story about the president warning his family members to avoid any conflict of interest with his presidency and their business ties?
Well, I'm not going to get into private conversations between the president and his family members. We all have lots of conversations with different family members, I'm sure. The president is committed to ensuring we have the most ethically vigorous administration in history, and that includes restrictions on how his image can be used, and that is something that he's conveyed publicly and privately as well. So let me just reiterate the policy for all of you, which is, I think, maybe your next question, or I'll just reiterate it proactively. It's the White House's policy that the president's name should not be used in connection with any commercial activities to suggest or in any way that could reasonably be understood to imply his endorsement or support. He's issued the farthest-reaching executive order with respect to the ethical commitments required of his appointees ever and is very proud of it. And, you know, that's something that he is committed to conveying to anyone it applies to.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki. More from that Politico article published yesterday. A law firm ad promoting Frank Biden's relationship with the president caused a stir when it ran on Inauguration Day. A federal investigation into Biden's son Hunter has invited scrutiny of just how strict a firewall he'll keep between the White House and the Justice Department. And another of the president's brothers, James, has previously come under fire for his business dealings. You can read more at Politico.com. Turning to foreign affairs, the National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan today warning about an escalating nuclear crisis that will be a critical early priority of the administration that is looking to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal that was negotiated under President Obama, then scrapped by President Trump. Here is the National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
When it comes to the question of how to approach Iran and the threat that it poses, there are real differences between the administration, the approach the Trump administration took and the approach the Biden administration will take. And it starts from a sober analysis of the state of affairs, which is that Iran's nuclear program has advanced dramatically over the course of the past couple of years. They are significantly closer to a nuclear weapon than they were when the previous administration withdrew from the JCPOA. Their ballistic missile capability has also advanced dramatically. To be fair, it advanced under the Obama administration, but it has accelerated over the course of the past 4 years. Their recklessness and sponsorship of terrorism in the region has not abated and in some areas has accelerated as well. Their direct attacks on partners in the region, their support for proxies who are getting more audacious both in attacks on U.S. forces and on partners in the region. All of this is the inheritance that we take. And our view is that if we can get back to diplomacy that can put Iran's nuclear program in a box, that will create a platform upon which to build a global effort, including partners and allies in the region and in Europe and elsewhere, to take on the other significant threats Iran poses, including on the ballistic missile issue. And I've said before publicly, and will reiterate, that we are going to have to address this considerable threat. We are going to have to address Iran's other bad behavior, malign behavior across the region. But from our perspective, a critical early priority has to be to deal with what is a escalating nuclear crisis as they move closer and closer to having enough fissile material for a weapon. And we would like to make sure that we reestablish some of the parameters and constraints around their program that have fallen away over the course of the past 2 years.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan at a virtual event today hosted by the U.S. Institute of Peace. The program also included former National Security Advisor under President Trump, Robert O'Brien, and it was moderated by Condoleezza Rice, who was National Security Advisor, then Secretary of State for President George W. Bush. The title today, Passing the Baton 2021, Securing America's Future Together. You'll be able to find the entire program at our video library, cspan.org. And thanks for being with us on Washington Today. Download the free C-SPAN radio app to listen anywhere and get this program and other C-SPAN programs as podcasts wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Have a good night and weekend.